This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for Come and Talk It with your host, Michael Cargill, brought to you by Texas Law Shield. Over the last decade, Michael has championed and supported the rights of law-abiding Texans to own and use firearms. He is the owner of Central Texas Gunworks, a veteran of the United States Army, and has achieved national exposure in such prestigious media outlets such as Forbes Magazine, Fox Business News, CNN Money, AOL, BBC World News, Huffington Post, and The New York Times. Cargill vigorously defends lawful gun ownership in this country without regard to party politics. And now, here's Michael Cargill.
Good day, Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. Let's praise the Lord and pass the ammunition. All right, so today, I want to give you a little insight into my life, Michael Cargill. You know, why did I open up a gun store? You know, how did I get to where I am today? And I'm doing this, you know, in cooperation with the Silencer Shop, you know, because silencers, get yourself a silencer, get yourself a suppressor, because you know what, back then in the day, if we had suppressors, we had silencers, then I think, you know, my hearing would be a lot better than it is right now. I wouldn't have tinnitus. And so I want to tell you a little bit about, you know, me. I want to get in depth, you know, and talk about, you know, why I opened the gun store, you know, what happened in my life with my family that I decided to make this drastic turn from the military, telecommunications, and being a gun store owner. Take a listen to this.
Yeah, so my grandmother decided that she was going to go to college, get a college degree. She wanted to become a nurse. And so she went back to college, started working on that. And when she was leaving from a college library one day, waiting for a bus to come, a guy came along, mugged her, and raped her. So I decided, you know, at that point, hey, you know, I really need to get the family involved in this stuff, and we need to, you know, take our own personal protection in our own hands.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Silencer Shop podcast. In today's episode, we bring you the very well-spoken and very knowledgeable Michael Cargill. Michael is the owner at Central Texas Gunworks, and since 2011, Mr. Cargill has been an advocate for gun safety and education. In this episode, we will discuss a multitude of topics, ranging from gun sales in 2020 to how this current presidential administration will affect the firearm industry. So let's not waste any more time, and let's get into it.
My name is Michael Cargill, the owner of Central Texas Gunworks. We've been here at this location here for 10 years. Sorry, this is our 10-year anniversary. And we do gun sales, we do transfers, we do classes, life scary handgun courses, private security courses. And man, we actually transfer like sometimes 100 guns a day here.
That's it? Just 100?
Yeah, just 100.
That's pretty impressive. So were you born in Austin?
I was born in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I went to school there. And after getting out of school, I actually went into the military, joined the United States Army, was there for about 12 years. I traveled all around the country back in 87 to 99. Then I got out of the Army, started working for a telecommunications company out of Austin here, and then did that for a little while, then worked for a telecommunications company out of Dallas. And then I started my own trucking company after that, moved elevators around the country for a company called Schindler Elevator, and then did that for a while. And then I finally opened up Central Texas Gunworks, and we've been here ever since.
Do you miss Florida?
Oh, yeah. Florida is great. I love the weather. You can't beat that. There's nothing like their clean beaches, because the beaches in Texas are not great at all. Anyone that says the beaches in Texas are great are lying. So the beaches in Florida are wonderful, you know, but Florida people are crazy.
I think my wife would agree that she loves Florida. I think it's a destination she wants to retire at. And I, now that I hear that, I think I'd be okay with it. When were you first introduced into the firearm world? Was it the military that gave you the introduction?
Yeah, it was the military. I was an armorer in the arms room, maintaining, you know, the firearms there in the military and making sure they're all up, you know, working and, you know, made any repairs we need to make and stuff like that. Then, you know, what got me into really open up a gun store, it was really my family. Mm-hmm. I wanted my family to be able to protect themselves.
Okay.
And I wanted them to feel comfortable walking into a gun store, because they weren't comfortable, you know, walking to a gun store. I said, well, you know what? You know, let me figure it out. So
why weren't they comfortable?
It was just some reason they just felt uncomfortable walking into the gun store in that atmosphere, you know, in Florida or Georgia, where my parents were at the time. And so I said, well, you know, let me figure out how to, you know, I could do it myself. So I, you know, did some little research or whatever, started teaching license to carry handgun courses. Back then it was called the CHO course. Did that, make sure everyone had their license. And then after that, we, you know, opened up the gun store and started selling guns.
Back up on me. Why did you join the military?
I joined the military because I didn't know what I wanted to do after finishing high school. So I wasn't ready for college. So I said, well, let me just go into the military. And believe it or not, I was a musician. I was in the United States Army Band. So actually, by the time I got an instrument? Oh, man, I played tuba, trumpet, and trombone. I mean, I know more about music than I do about firearms. Yeah, I can, you know, write music. I can sit here and write out the entire score to the national anthem. You know, so, but I haven't done that stuff in quite a while.
Okay. What's your favorite type of music? If you had to pick one. If you were on a desert island, what's the one genre of music that you have to have with you?
I'm going to take a hit from this one, but I love military. I love marches. I love John Philip Sousa. I love marches. You know, they just get me riled up. And, you know, when I want to get my day started, I pull into the parking lot. Man, I listen to a good march and I'm ready to go.
What did the military teach you?
Discipline. Discipline, definitely. And I think that was the main thing, really, because I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't have any purpose in life. And once I joined the military, I said, okay, I've done this. Now I know I want to do my own thing and be my own person and go out, you know, into the world from there.
Was there a moment during the military experience that you had, was there a moment like, man, I'm not cut out for this. This was a bad decision. This is a bad idea. Was there ever anything like that?
Oh, yeah, that was basic training. Are you kidding me? Oh, yeah. Day one. I was like, okay, this guy's yelling at me like he's crazy. Okay, mom, I made a mistake. Get me out of here. If I can click my heels and get out of here, I would have gone right then and there. But I, you know, hung in there, stuck it through, and then decided to get out in 1999. I was stationed before that. Second to the last duty station was Little Creek Amphibious Base, where I was an instructor for the Armed Forces School of Music, teaching, you know, Army, Marine, and Navy how to march in a military style band. And so did that, and then I got out, left there and went to Fort Hood, and then I ended up getting out of the Army at Fort Hood.
So when you first started, you opened up your own trucking company to ship around elevators, right? Was that the first business that you opened?
The first business I opened? Yeah. Yes, it was the trucking company. That's correct. Yes.
So what was that like in knowing that basically all the responsibility is falling on your head? Every mistake is yours. Every, you know, reward is yours. What was that sensation like?
It's when you're depending on other people, you know, you're definitely worried about that part of it, you know, because not everyone cares about your business the way you do. Really big on, you know, big on customer service and stuff like that. I wanted people to always have a good experience. So when you're putting it in someone else's hands, you know, that definitely, you know, that can stress you out a little bit. But outside of that, it was, everything's always new to me. Military was new. I had to figure it all out. You know, starting a business was new. I had to figure it all out. So all that stuff, you know, it's always like that.
And you're listening to my life, my story of, you know, how I got into being a gun store. And, you know, I'm digging deep. I'm telling you all the insides, all the outs, and, you know, some of the things that were, you know, personal to me. I'm telling you about my life, my personal story. I'm telling you about my family, things I've never said before. So I hope you're enjoying this. This is Michael Cargill, and you are listening to Come and Talk It.
Peace. This is Maj Toure. You're listening to Come and Talk It Radio with Michael Cargill.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
Talk 13-7, the right choice.
Welcome back to Come and Talk It. And now here's Michael Cargill.
All right, we're back and we're talking about my life, my story. We're talking about Central Texas Gunworks as an owner of a gun store and as a, you know, a guy who wanted to, you know, do self-defense. I wanted to, you know, talk about use of force and deadly force. I want to train my family. I wanted my family members, my mother, my father, my loved ones to be able to defend themselves because I wanted to stop being a victim. And so we're talking about my life, my story, and this is, you know, how it all played out. Take a listen to this.
So let's get into why you opened up Centex Gun. We did some research, and apparently there was a very traumatic experience that happened to your grandmother.
Right.
Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, so my grandmother decided that she was going to go to college, get a college degree. She wanted to become a nurse, and so she went back to college, started working on that. And when she was leaving from a college library one day, waiting for a bus to come, a guy came along, mugged her, and raped her. So I decided, you know, at that point, hey, you know, I really need to get the family involved in this stuff, and we need to, you know, take our own personal protection in our own hands. You know, can't depend on the police to come and save you and stuff like that. You need to jump in there and really take care of yourself, because by the time the police arrive, they only there to fill out a report.
How did they perceive the idea of you wanting to arm them? Were they open to it? Were they understanding? Were they fearful?
Oh, man, everyone's ready. They were at that point, you know, they were, the entire family was ready. So I would literally, I would have people in the living room of my house. You know, it first started with the family, and we would do, you know, gun safety, learning about the firearm, you know, teaching people how to shoot, going out to the range, and then doing the license to carry handgun course, going over the laws and stuff like that, because that's really important. A lot of people don't know, you know, what they can and can't do and all that good kind of stuff. And then it went from the family to like neighbors. Neighbors are like, well, why are these cars here in front of your house on a Saturday, you know? And, you know, well, what are you guys doing? Oh, we're doing gun stuff. Oh, wow, well, we want to learn. And so then the neighbors, and then after that, it grew from there. It went from neighbors, and then I said, okay, well, we need to get a hotel conference room. And I took it to the conference room. We started doing classes in the conference rooms. And then the conference rooms got like overbooked. And I said, okay, well, we need to find our own place. So then we, you know, look for this location here, which we found this place after like a year, because no one wanted to allow us to sell guns and teach classes. Really, at that time, it was just teaching classes. No one would allow us to rent a space, building, or anything to teach classes in Austin.
Austin is a very blue city in a red state. How did you overcome that? How did you make people understand that this is a necessity?
I hired someone to go around, to find me a place. You know, I was like, hey, dude, you know, you need to go around and find a place, you know, and it took an entire year, you know. Luckily, we found this place here, and I can't see myself leaving here. It's a great location, you know, get on, get off, you know, from the highway there, and there's a bar here. You can buy your gun.
Bender Bar, is that place still open?
Bender Bar, go have a drink.
They have an awesome burger. I remember I used to go to that place.
Great wing night, let me tell you.
Okay. Those were some of the obstacles that, you know, you had to overcome. What are some other things that you had to, that you didn't really, that you didn't see coming?
I never didn't know anything about a firearms business. So there's so many rules, you know. I had to get in, read the books. Because no one taught me anything. No one taught me. No one showed me. I was an apprentice or anything. I had to learn everything from scratch all by myself. So, you know, everything I had, you know, I had to really sit down and read and look it up and research and stuff like that.
So what were some of the resources that you used?
The ATF regulation, you know, the Texas, you know, gun laws, you know, and going to the Capitol and sitting in different hearings and listening to how, you know, they're some of the things they're looking at changing and some things they actually change and staying on top of that when the changes were made. So that all that stuff actually helped me out a lot.
How do you have partners? Do you have investors? How did you, because it takes money to start a business.
Now, this was all me and all from scratch and money that I got from the trucking company.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you just took one business and then sold it? Did you sell the business?
Correct. Okay. I took that and then it moved into this and started this, and we started, like I said, from scratch. I did start with a partner here. We did the gun stuff. Initially, the person that sold the guns was a totally different person. I actually never wanted to get into gun sales at all. Initially, I wanted to teach classes. So that was
just your thing. You just
the thing
wanted
was to training and classes and instruct.
Okay.
Well, what happened was I met up with a guy at like a gun show, and he said, I want to look for a place to sell guns other than gun shows, because gun shows get a bad rap. I said, okay, yeah. Well, I said, I want to look for a place to have a class. So we found this place here, and he was doing he had the FFL, and I actually managed it initially. And so he had another business that he was running during the day. He would just come in every now and then, and I would actually manage the entire place. So then it got to a point that only lasted, I want to say, like 6 months to a year. And then he left, and I got my own FFL, you know, and then boom, you know, from there, Central Texas Gunworks, Michael Cargill.
Did you have any problems running into finding a bank that would essentially hold on to your money? Was that an issue that you ran into?
The bank, no, was not an issue. Okay. Credit card processors, that's the issue.
Okay.
You know, so, you know, trying to...
And why was it an issue?
For some reason, the credit card processors, they don't like gun sales at all. Google don't like guns. Facebook, Twitter don't like firearms. So there's no advertisement. You know, back then, you could advertise on Facebook and stuff like that when I first started. But nowadays, you can't. There's no, you know, you can't do anything with Google, not a whole bunch, you know, with Facebook, Twitter, when it comes to firearms, especially if your page goes to a, you know, where it goes to firearm sales. So it was hard. And then the credit card processors, that was our really big issue, trying to process credit cards, because a lot of them said, no, absolutely not. You know, don't like gun sales. And I actually had quite a few credit card processors cancel us. You know, so we actually found someone that was okay with the gun industry.
Who was that?
So we go through, I think it was TSIS at the time. Yeah.
So relying on the previous experience of running a business, how did you take those concepts of running your truckee business and implement those ideas into running a firearm store?
Well, it's all military, started from the military leadership, you know, and the drive to learn something new and grow and go from there. And figuring out, you know, the ins and outs of everything, you know, what you can, what you can't do, what are the rules, what are, you know, just figuring all that stuff out. That the military gave me that foundation. So I owe that to the military, and then everything else, you know, I just had to learn it here once I started.
So now, as guns, well, advertising on the internet and social media platforms becomes more controversial, how do you navigate those waters in making yourself well known in from a marketing sense?
Man, I gotta tell you my marketing secrets.
No, you don't. If you want to keep that close to your heart, yeah, by all means, if you can just give
when
us
I'm
a
ready
little
to tidbit. Retire, I'll tell you my marketing secrets.
Okay.
Not ready right now.
Gotcha.
But yeah, it's
Do you think it's unfair?
That yes, because firearms, that's the one thing that you actually have to get a federal firearms background check in order to get access to that product. You know, so if you have to get an FBI background check, you know, no one else should have a problem with it. And we found this out when we started accepting cryptocurrency for firearm sales.
Really?
Yeah, we're the first gun store in the world to accept multiple cryptocurrencies.
Does that scare you?
No, because we started doing it back in 2014, and initially, you know, kind of looked into it in 2013, and you know, I did a lot of research on it. And I said, okay, well, it's so what? It's not stable. It's not a stable currency, so it is a gamble, you know, because it does bounce, goes up, comes down. So you kind of have to watch
significantly.
It
significantly,
right? It could change just like that, yep. In a matter of a day. A guy like Elon Musk gets involved into it, and boom, it shoots up and goes through the roof. You know, but if he sells, it's gonna drop down like a, you know, like a like a rock. So you have to be, you know, just conscious of that.
Forget about like being in the firearms industry. What stresses you out the most as being a business owner?
Just if something happens, something bad happens, I'm gonna be the one that's responsible. You know, if something happens where I can't make payroll or, you know, something like that, those are things that would
pandemic be, maybe.
Yeah, goodness gracious. The country shuts down, you're like, oh my God, you know, we have to shut everything down. You know, so things like that, and you know, that definitely would stress me out.
We are, like I said, we are kind of a blue city in a red state. What is it like running a gun store in a very progressive, liberal city?
You're always under the defense. You know, they're always being attacked. And I get involved in politics and what goes on in the city and in the state. So I'll get, whenever I say something on the news or something, you know, in the press, and they don't like it because we're in Austin, and I'll get code enforcement. For some reason, someone will call code enforcement to report something on me. They'll call Texas Department of Public Safety and report something on me. I've done news stories where I have people actually call DPS and, you know, report the news story to DPS. You know, just a multitude of things, you know, and so you're always under attack. You know, my attorneys always stay busy. You know, it's just the price. That's the price of doing business. Those are the issues that I actually have to deal with, you know, not worried about business itself, but worrying about what, you know, when I do this, I do this news story, you know, what's going to come from it? Am I going to get this postcard? I've gotten postcards to my house with a scripture on it during Christmas time, you know, of gunshot wound victim shot in the face, wishing me a Merry Christmas, you know. So those are the things I get.
So because you are very outspoken for gun rights, mm-hmm. It seems like you have to run this business to perfection.
Yes.
You have to make sure everything is on the up and up.
Yes. Yes. Because if I don't, you know, I'll have, I've had the ATF come in, do an inspection like every single year, mm-hmm. You know, a couple times, you know, like three or four times in a row.
Three or four times a year. Yeah. Wow.
No, once a year, but okay. Like every year.
Right.
You know, and then I've had DPS come in to inspect. It's like, hey, why are you guys coming to inspect? Oh, because we got a phone call, you know, and so you have to.
Yeah.
I have to run it, you know, to perfection because of that, because we're in Travis County, in Austin, Texas, you know, that blue dot. And they hate firearms. So, and I've had them say they don't want my input, you know, on what happens at city council on a particular commission because I deal in gun sales, which makes no sense, you know. Hey, Michael Cargill, we don't want your input on traffic in Austin because you sell guns.
And you're listening to my life, my story of, you know, how I got into being a gun store, and you know, I'm digging deep. I'm telling you all the insides, all the outs, and you know, some of the things that were, you know, personal to me. I'm telling you about my life, my personal story. I'm telling you about my family, things I've never said before. So I hope you're enjoying this. This is Michael Cargill, and you are listening to Come and Talk It.
Austin's Talk, 1370.
Welcome back to Come and Talk It. And now here's Michael Cargill.
All right, we're back and we're talking about my life, my story. We're talking about Central Texas Gunworks as an owner of a gun store and as a, you know, a guy who wanted to feel. Do self-defense. I wanted to, you know, talk about use of force and deadly force. I want to train my family. I wanted my family members, my mother, my father, my loved ones to be able to defend themselves because I wanted to stop being a victim. And so we're talking about my life, my story, and this is, you know, how it all played out. Take a listen to this.
So I think that kind of leads us into 2020. How many times were you broken into during that time period?
We had one, luckily, knock on wood, only one break-in in 2020, and it was they were pretty aggressive. So it was a group of eight people, and it happened on...
Eight people, wow.
A group of eight people.
I remember hearing it on the news. I'm like, I didn't remember it being eight people.
Yeah, it was eight people, five vehicles. And so it was right around June 1st, I think it was, and they actually... On that day, multiple businesses were broken into around the same time. So us attempted break-in. One of the other gun stores up north of Austin, they broke in, stole like almost 40 guns. Two pawn shops were hit. Academy Sports, two different locations were hit. Target was hit. Two different targets were hit. So it was just crazy mayhem in the city because the police were mainly downtown and there were protesters downtown. So all the resources were there. You know, they're stretched so, you know, so thin. And so on that day, eight people, five vehicles deep, tried to bust their way through the front entrance. They shot five rounds to the front entrance. One of the bullets that was recovered, one of the shell casings that were recovered, was matched the shell casing that was recovered from a drive-by shooting. So these people were trying to get access to gun to commit other crimes. And so luckily they were not able to break in. You know, our security measures held up. Thankfully, we, you know, had enough cameras in the parking lot. We can see what was going on. We contacted police, you know, and we were trying to get here also at the same time. So it's a matter of timing when it comes to that kind of stuff. And so we were able to, we actually missed him by like 30 seconds.
How far do you live from?
I live North Austin.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to tell you how long it took me to get here, but it was pretty quick.
Kind of talk me through the moment you realized I'm getting broken into, my business is under attack.
Oh, immediately I had someone grab their phone. We dialed 911. Immediately I contacted the alarm company, you know, trying to get the, you know, because I wanted to keep the alarm from going off as long as possible so I can get the police here because I didn't want them to be alerted. And then, you know, once they, you know, went through a certain layer, alarm goes off. It was just crazy. I was in a panic. Because I was like, oh my goodness, they're going to get in and they're going to get, you know, get everything. Luckily, we lock everything up in a safe, you know, every night. We don't leave it out, which is smart. So it puts all those different layers because I'm really big on security. And if I get my gun stolen, then I suck as a security, you know, professional or go-to person. So I'm glad I was able to slow that down.
So 2020, we have the pandemic. And a lot of other things happened during that time frame, but...
Oh, before
yes,
you go there.
Yeah.
And then also, I was able to learn from that experience. So I learned by adding more security measures, more cameras, and updated my alarm system. So I said, okay, we need to, you know, get a bigger buffer, give the police more opportunity, more time to get here. So we learned from that experience.
How did you see there was a huge explosion in firearm sales. How did that affect your business? Both good and negative.
Right. Initially, it was great, man. March 13th, I call that D-Day. That's when everyone walked into a gun store to purchase, you know, firearms. And when I actually was off that day, because that was my weekend. That's my birthday weekend. So I was actually taken off. And when I so happened, came back to the store and I looked inside and like everything was like gone. I'm like, did we get robbed? What happened? You know, they're like, no, we sold everything. They were all excited. I'm like, oh my goodness. And I'm thinking, I don't have that much coming in, you know? So what do I do? So I had to pull some strings out of my bag of tricks and get a bunch of guns in here, which I don't know if I want to tell you what I did.
keep your secrets.
Gotta keep my secrets.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I got a bunch of guns in here, you know, in here pretty quick, but it was just crazy. And then, once that initial burst happened, then it was like, okay, now inventory is starting to slow down as we get through the year. You know, initially it was great. Oh, we're selling, we're getting stuff coming in. So stuff is coming in. But then once the distributors start drying up and we're noticing, oh, the manufacturers, some of them had to shut down. So if they're shut down, so something's going to stop. And once that stops and slows down, then it started hurting as we got into 2020, you know, because I don't have product to sell. Don't have enough product to sell.
Demand is there, but the supply is not.
Demand is high, supply is low.
Why March 13th? What significant events happened there? Can you remember?
March 13th, that was when they started making an announcement of South by Southwest was going to be shut down, and that's really big.
That was huge.
Right. So when you say there's no South by Southwest because of a possible pandemic or a pandemic, that was the burst of everything.
And what is South by Southwest for people who are not?
That's like a music film, you know, festival that we have here in Austin, Texas. Very, very popular around the globe. And people come here from all over the place to, you know, show their films or music or just whatever.
I think we were sitting at a brewery here in Austin.
Actually, before that, earlier that week, I got a call from a friend of mine. He's in the security business. And he says, Michael? I said, yeah. He said, they're getting ready to shut it down. I was like, what do you mean? He said, they get ready to shut it down. I'm like, dude, you're crazy. Are you a QAnon? He's like, they get ready to shut it down. I'm like, okay. And he was right. You know, and it shut down completely.
During that, my wife's a nurse, and she was calm, cool, and collected. I was flipping I was just losing my mind. From your perspective, what was going through your mind that, you know, here comes this virus?
Honestly, never even had a chance to think about it, you know, because we never closed. So we stayed open, you know, because I'm just hesitant and shutting things down and being away from this place too long. Cause I'm afraid someone's going to climb through or something. And so we never shut down. We were open, but we did get to a point where, okay, everyone's got to wear a mask. So we all start wearing masks. And it took us a while to get to that point. I want to say maybe a month, like maybe May. So we're like, okay, everyone's got to wear a mask. None of us are, to my knowledge, none of my employees have been affected, to my knowledge. You know, they've been tested multiple times. And so that was fine. We got into May, we started wearing masks. And then May, the month of April, we didn't do any classes. All classes stopped for that entire month. We did start classes back in May, and we reduced them to 10 people a class, social distancing. So we did that like May, June, and I want to say July, we opened up to more people in the class. Everyone still wore a mask. Get into August, September, we added more people. And then, you know, as we got into the end of last year, more people. This year, more people. So we're kind of still masked inside the classroom, but we're more people, you know, in the class.
Another thing that happened in 2020 is that Austin defunded the police. George Floyd was a major incident that happened during 2020, and it sparked all the protests. Do you think those protests helped? Not helped. I don't think helps the right word. But do you think those protests was a cause for the firearm boom?
It's a combination of everything. So initially, it was the country shutting down. Then we had the, you know, I think people were cooped up for a long time, and they needed an excuse and a reason for anything. So then the George Floyd thing incident happened. And then after that, people got word of Breonna Taylor, which actually happened on March 13th, which was, and that's really important, because like March 13th, the entire country is shutting down, and they did a no-knock warrant on someone's house. I was like, thank God that's not my house, because on March 13th, everyone was in a panic. So then they got word of that. So that started more protests. You have Breonna Taylor, you have George Floyd. And then you get into, you know, get into like June, July, and then they started doing, hey, let's defund the police. Oh, what a concept. You're a bunch of idiots. You know, defunding the police. All right. You know, and I think what they wanted to do was move funds from one portion of the police department to another. But that's not how, you know, it really happens. You know, so you start in Austin. What he did was, okay, we're not able to hire more police officers. They stopped the academy, so police officers couldn't go to the academy to be trained. And so now we have a shortage of law enforcement in this city, and, you know, it affects everything. Crime is increased. You know, you have this homeless issue, which is increased. And to me, it's just a complete mess right now.
As a black man, what is your relationship with the police?
I have a good relationship with law enforcement. I don't have an issue with law enforcement at all. But I'm a realist. You know, we do have issues. There are issues where, you know, some law enforcement officers do, you know, overstep that bound. And then, you know, if you're another police officer where, you know, you're noticing that someone is doing something and you don't say something, then you become part of the problem. So that issue is there. It does exist. And you have to go back and think about law enforcement and how it began initially, which is, you know, way back in, you know, the 1600s. You have your first law enforcement, you know, was really, they were created to retrieve, you know, free runaway slaves. So when you go back to think about it like that, you know, I can understand why a lot of people have this fear for law enforcement being in the Black community.
I had a realization that the police aren't necessarily, they're not the right tool for emergencies, because I accidentally set off my alarm in my household. I just moved in with my girlfriend, now my wife, and I forgot the code. So it's going off. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, okay, well, I can't turn it off. So I'll just wait outside because eventually the police are going to come. And it took them 20 minutes to mm-hmm. get to my home. In my mind, I'm thinking, man, these guys are taking forever. What if this was a real emergency? Mm-hmm. What, I mean, all these horrible images and ideas are coming into my brain of like, well,
20 minutes, your stuff is gone. At least like a minute or two.
My stuff is gone. They're filling a body bag with me and my wife, you know, all these terrible ideas.
Correct.
And I'm like, okay, maybe we need to rethink this idea of an alarm system. Maybe we need to do something more proactive in the heat of an emergency. So that's when I kind of realized that, you know, you kind of have to do the due diligence of yourself to make sure you are properly protected.
Right.
And what is the most effective way of protecting yourself? Well, it's a firearm.
Right. It's up to you to protect yourself and also protect your family. You cannot depend on law enforcement. We do need police officers. We do need law enforcement. Anyone that says that we don't, you know, is living in la-la land. That's not true at all. But then people will call 911 for some very, you know, just crazy things, you know, because they're in the drive through at McDonald's and they didn't put enough, you know, French fries in their box.
I've heard those
that.
Stories. It's
yeah,
ridiculous.
It's insane. Yeah. That call for service. There's too many calls for service and we need to reduce that. And also, I think police officer, law enforcement have too many rules that they have to follow within a department. You know, there are laws that we have on the books, you know, that you can be prosecuted for. And then there are rules they have to follow for the individual police departments. And I think sometimes that stuff gets so confusing, you know, to officers. And I think they just need to follow what the law says. What does the law says about use of force and deadly force? Follow that, and I think we'll be fine.
And you're listening to my life, my story of, you know, how I got into being a gun store. And, you know, I'm digging deep. I'm telling you all the insides, all the outs, and, you know, some of the things that were, you know, personal to me. I'm telling you about my life, my personal story. I'm telling you about my family, things I've never said before. So I hope you're enjoying this. This is Michael Cargill, and you are listening to Come and Talk It.
Austin's Talk 1370.
Welcome back to Come and Talk It. And now here's Michael Cargill.
All right, we're back and we're talking about my life, my story. We're talking about Central Texas Gunworks as an owner of a gun store and as a, you know, a guy who wanted to, you know, do self-defense. I wanted to, you know, talk about use of force and deadly force. I want to train my family. I wanted my family members, my mother, my father, my loved ones to be able to defend themselves because I wanted to stop being a victim. And so we're talking about my life, my story, and this is, you know, how it all played out. Take a listen to this.
I've heard that you opposed universal background checks.
Yes.
Why?
Universal background check, what that is, that's if all gun sales, all sales will have to be done, you know, in a gun store, or you have to get a background check to get it done. That means private sales from one private person to another. That means if you're a convicted felon, you will not be able to have access to a firearm. So let's say, you know, I had someone in my family, which I don't, but let's say I did, that was convicted of a felony, maybe for a certain amount of marijuana. They did it like 40 years ago. They're 60 years old now. They've been an outstanding citizen, worked the entire life, and they want to get a gun at home for personal protection because, hey, you know, pandemic, shut down, defund the police, whatever, like everyone else. So they want to protect their family. Well, after 5 years in Texas, As long as they're off of paper, probation, all that stuff, they can have a gun at home for personal protection. But they can only get that firearm if they get it as a private sale or as a gift. If you pass universal background checks, that person will never be able to get access to a firearm. That means that whatever they did 40 years ago, they would never have paid their debt to society. And so what's the purpose of releasing people from jail if you're not going to give them the rights back? They should be able to purchase a gun for their family, for their personal protection. But universal background checks will eliminate that. That means all gun sales, you have to pass the FBI background check in order to get access to that firearm.
There's been two recent mass shootings in the news.
Mm-hmm.
The Democrats and progressive left want to essentially ban ARs.
Mm.
Why is that not... why is that a bad idea?
It's bad, and I think it's going to be impossible to do. Because if they do that, then you're going to make millions of people felons. Because there are so many AR-15s out here. And then the second you say you're going to ban something, that's when everyone runs to the gun store to go buy it. So you're going to open up the floodgates. You know, even the stimulus money that they gave out, you know, last week or week before last, whatever.
Stimmy checks, they're nice.
Yeah, people are walking to the gun store to buy guns, you know, all weekend long. From the, you know, hey, I'm using my stimulus money to buy a gun. You know, so, you know, thank you, President Biden, you know, for supporting the gun industry. But if you say you're going to ban something, that's what's going to happen. You know, they're going to get it, and you're going to turn all those people into felons, because a lot of people are not going to want to give up those ARs. I love my AR. I can shoot better with the AR than I can with the handgun.
Why is that?
I don't know. No, just I feel more comfortable with the rifle. I feel more comfortable with the AR. I like it. I like it for, you know, home defense. You know, it's a great home defense gun. I learned my 30-round capacity because I don't know how many people are trying to break into my house.
What is the issue here? How do we solve these terrible, terrible things? Because, granted, nobody on the political left or political right wants to see these shootings happen.
Correct.
No one wants to see innocent people die. But what's the resolution? Where's the happy medium?
Yeah, whenever they, you know, we have these little cases, these little shootings that happen, you know, they always go back to the family. And they always, you know, someone always says, yeah, well, we knew we had issues, you know, and... but we just, you know, like this very last shooting, his family knew he had a problem. They knew he had purchased a gun. They kicked him out of the house instead of getting him some help. The family didn't take responsibility for that. Instead, they kicked him out of the house and say, you know what? Something's going on with little Johnny, you know, whatever his name is. We need to get him some help, get him some assistance. You know, that family, that's what family is for. And none of that happened. You cannot legislate crazy. You know, if the family is not going to step up to the plate and do what they're going to do, it's going to be hard for anyone else to do that. Because if a person's dead set on killing someone, which is murder, you know, you're crazy enough to murder someone, then you're going to get your hands on a gun to do whatever you want to do. You know, whether steal it or whatever, you're going to execute that and make it happen.
And you're listening to my life, my story of, you know, how I got into being a gun store. And, you know, I'm digging deep. I'm telling you all the insides, all the outs, and, you know, some of the things that were, you know, personal to me. I'm telling you about my life, my personal story. I'm telling you about my family, things I've never said before. So I hope you're enjoying this. This is Michael Cargill, and you are listening to Come and Talk It.
Talk 13-7, the right choice.
Welcome back to Come and Talk It. And now here's Michael Cargill.
All right, we're back and we're talking about my life, my story. We're talking about Central Texas Gun Works as an owner of a gun store and as a, you know, a guy who wanted to, you know, do self-defense. I wanted to, you know, talk about use of force and deadly force. I want to train my family. I wanted my family members, my mother, my father, my loved ones to be able to defend themselves because I wanted to stop being a victim. And so we're talking about my life, my story, and this is, you know, how it all played out. Take a listen to this.
As the firearm industry is booming and growing, what's the new demographic you're seeing as the firearms industry is?
Absolutely. So in 2020, we saw a lot of people in the black community walk into the gun store to purchase firearms who didn't normally do it. Now, within the last 30 days, last few weeks, actually, seeing a lot of people in the Asian community take classes and stuff like that. So whenever something happens in the news, you'll see that in the gun store, you know, exactly what happens in the news. You know, Biden mentions, you know, we need to ban, you know, assault weapons. We need to ban high capacity magazines. People start calling about extended magazines. You know, I need to get that 30 round magazine. You know, so, you know, what they call for, what they see on the news, you know, the president is very powerful, whether it's, you know, good or bad, very powerful person. If you stand on that podium, that bullet pulpit, right, yep, and you say those words, people will respond to exactly what you say. And it may not be the response that you want.
How do you see this administration affecting the firearms industry? I know you kind of touched on it, but how do you see that affecting the firearms industry?
I can see them passing universal background checks. I can see that happen easily as we, you know, the more you highlight a shooting, and I'll ask the media. I asked them, I said, how come you guys don't talk about suicides? And they'll tell me, we don't talk about suicides because they'll have more suicides. Well, then why you guys talk about shootings? Because if you mention it, you know, you talk about this, you highlight the way you're doing it, they're going to have more shootings, and you'll have more people, you know, will come out of the woodworks. You'll trigger the crazies. And so that, and that's what they're kind of doing. So this administration is going to come after universal background checks, going to get that passed. They're also going to get the bill passed where the delay, and, you know, they're going to extend that delay, whatever it's going to be, 10 days. And then if you are still delayed within 10 days, they're going to extend, you know, you're going to have to apply to get an extension to go past that. So you're looking at 20 days, before you can actually get a firearm. So it's going to hurt the people that are actually trying to do the right thing and do it the right way.
Why don't they see that?
Because,
or why don't they want to listen?
It's about control. It's about controlling, groups of people. And gun control has always been like that. Yeah, I have to go back and look at the history of gun control. Back in the 1600s, the very first gun control law in this country was you could not sell any firearms to indigenous people, the Indians. The second gun control law was you could not repair firearms to indigenous people. The punishment was death. So then we come to Texas and you say, hey, what happened in Texas? Back in the 1800s in Texas, you know, we started Jim Crow laws, meaning that, you know, free slaves couldn't have access to firearms. So what happened was in 1869, down in Galveston, Texas, everyone had rifles, they had shotguns. They said, we're not going to start regulating those, but we are going to start regulating our handguns. So in 1870, they had some handgun laws go into effect. Where 1870, they started regulating handguns, but they never touched long guns. So that's why in Texas, you can walk down the street here and you can openly carry a rifle ever since 1870.
Since we are Silencer Shop, what is your take on silencers and how do they help newbies new people who are in looking to buy a gun? How does that help them shoot?
Man, I think, and I wanted to do this at one time. I always get distracted. I want to have all my beginner classes, you know, my rental guns with silencers on them. So that way, especially the beginner classes, so, you know, we can get, people can have a better experience with, and they understand, you know, we can focus on the shooting portion, not the big bang, you know, the loud noise. Cause you know, I call myself a gun therapist, and I get a lot of people that want to shoot who've had maybe something bad happen in their family, their life, and they're so concerned with the big bang. Once we get past that, you know, then we can focus on the shooting aspects. And if I was to use, you know, silencers, you know, for all of my rentals, I think that would actually help out a lot. You know, I think we should have started this a long time ago, years ago. We should have, you know, every gun, that's what the government should require. You know, they actually should require people to actually have a silencer for every one of their firearms. Man, I love the silencer shop. I love the kiosk that we have here in the lobby. I love the fact that people can come in. We made the process, you know, silencer shop has made the process to get a suppressor or silencer so easy. You can walk to the gun store, you know, and you can do your fingerprints on the machine, the kiosk, set up your account, download the app, do your photo, email your trust in, and then boom, we link that, you know, suppressor to your account. Silencer shop does all the paperwork. They submit it to the ATF, get your tax stamp to you. Like in 2020, as bad as we say it was, but I think it was a good thing that ATF, a lot of them were working from home. So we started getting tax stamps back in like 6 months. I got one back in 30 days. I was like, oh my goodness.
That is impressive.
Yeah. So it was great. They were working from home. So, The process now is so much easier, and I love that process. It's easier, I think, the way we're doing it right now to get a silencer suppressor than it is to get a LTC. You know, the fact that I, you know, for a license to carry a handgun, I got to go through this one private company to find a location, make an appointment, and wait maybe 2 weeks to get an appointment to get fingerprints done. But if I want to get a silencer, I want to get a machine gun, I can walk into the lobby of the gun store, do the fingerprints on the kiosk there, download the app, do my picture, and do all that stuff and get it done.
I'll write you a check after this podcast. How did you get to this point in your life? How much of it was luck versus hard work?
I think all of it's hard work, because nothing in life is easy. And this is the gun industry in Austin, Texas. It was not easy, you know, to get to where we are here today and, you know, where we're going down the road. It's never easy. There's always something. And life throws so many curveballs at you. You know, I mean, look at 2020, and then we start off with 2021. You know, hold my jacket. We're going to take all your power away and take, you know, jump into that. So, you know, life throws you curveballs. So nothing is easy. You know, my hat's off to everyone that lives in Austin, Texas in February of 2021, because you deserve a medal.
I hope you enjoyed this. You know, this was really hard for me to, you know, tell you the things that are dear and near to me. I hope you learned a lot about me, and I hope this helps you out. Maybe you want to start a business, something that's near and dear to you. So I hope you really enjoyed, you know, my story, Michael Cargill, along with Silencer Shop. And I want to thank Silencer Shop for taking the time to sit down with me and, you know, let me spill my guts about my life and my story. As always, more guns equals less crime. You go out there and you buy yourself a gun. You've been listening to Come and Talk It with Michael Cargill.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.